Hi, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we have our usual sports writers coming up at the bottom half of the hour. First half of the hour, we're going to talk some sports in general, Tim and I are. And then we also, we'll be checking in on the scoreboard, the high school tournament scoreboard this evening. Friend Nick Kukuru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, is at the Talbot Rink at the O'Malley School in Gloucester covering the Gloucester Marblehead game. And we do have an early score in on that, but we're going to hold off on that till we get a hold of Nick, let him do some reporting. We're also going to try to check Twitter. I know Tim is great at checking Twitter, and see what we can get some updates around the scoreboard. One score we have from MIAA Division 5 in basketball, Taconic, and that sounds like something you take for medicine. Taconic beat Salem Academy today, 63-44. You have any idea where Taconic is, Tim?
I want to say Central Mass.
All right.
They all have kind of those kind of names out there.
Yeah. Also, we have a score from the Essex Sports Center, St. John's Prep, on the way to a good start against Winchester, as the Prep is leading 4-0. And you may or may not have seen on the other night, you may have seen our interview with Coach Christian Hansen on Friday night, I guess it was a Saturday. Yeah, Friday night, the game was 3-1, or Thursday night, whatever it was, the opening game against like a 35th ranked team. And people were wondering, wait a minute, what's wrong with the Prep? Well, let me tell you something. You ever see one of those games, Tim, where you have the bases loaded every inning and you score one run per inning maybe, or don't even get it in, but you absolutely dominate the game? That's what the Prep did. The Prep had something like 60, 65, 70 scoring chances. The time of possession was all in the other guy's rink. So don't worry about the Prep. They're doing okay.
Yeah, I did see some quips on the Twitter feed. People were surprised by the low score. But, you know, sometimes you have a team with a hot goalie, and he makes a lot of outstanding saves, and you know, you can dominate time of possession, and you probably dominate overall the play in the game, but the other team just does enough to disrupt the flow of your possession and doesn't let you get, you know, your usual open shots. Only matters, Rick, the final score.
Yep, and that's what Coach Hansen said. He said, you know, the boys played well, and we won the game. Other scores in boys hockey tonight, as I said, we will be getting a report from Nick Kukuru on the Gloucester Marblehead game. The Prep beating Winchester in Division 1, and St. Mary's coming up short against Xaverian by a score of 4-2. That game being played was played at Canton Ice House in Canton. In Division 2, Long Meadow and Tewksbury they're in the second period now, no score. In Division 2, after two periods, actually into the third now, Masconomet, maybe on another collision course to face Gloucester. Masconomet, way out in front of Quincy by a score of 5-1. And I will tell you now, the Fishermen had a 3-0 lead after one. Marblehead has come back, and it's now 3-1 Fishermen. So we'll get that report from Nick, hopefully, in a little while. And finally, in girls hockey, Archbishop Williams and Pembroke are tied up at the end of two periods. No, at the end of the game. So it's overtime now. Archbishop Williams and Pembroke tied at 2-2. That's in Division 2, second round, end of regulation. And all of the games we talked about in boys hockey, also in the second round. Same thing for basketball. So the MIAA tournament lives, and it's a good thing, Tim. And I don't know if you have any opinion about what the tournament looks like this year, but most coaches, if not all, who are in the tournament at least, are really happy to be playing.
Well, after, you know, the layoff that they faced, the inability to play the tournament the last couple of years, everybody's glad to be out there. And with this, you know, expanded tournament, you know, number one, taking on number 66, and you're thinking, 66? Come on now. You know, should the field be that big? I think that's what a lot of people, you know, do question. Is the field diluted that you're going to see a lot of, you know, really out of kilter scores? You know, you're going to see big scores. St. John's Prep played in number 66 seed. There's not much of a match there. You know, put some points on players' resumes and all. But how would, you know, it's good for the team that gets to play. you know, but how much of it does be a psyche? You get you, you know, your butt handed to you, but you walk on the ice and you think St. John's Prep and you go, oh boy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go out there, you play the best, you try your hardest, and again, you, what kind of records are you getting in? That's the thing that always disturbed me, is some of the records that get in. But, you know, everybody's happy to be playing, and coaches, players, the parents. So, you know, let's give them all they do. They put in the time. They put in the effort. So let's go play those games.
All right, shifting gears, Tim. Any opinions on baseball, Major League Baseball?
You know, you got owners who make millions, if not billions of dollars. You've got players whose average salary is somewhere around $4 million. There are guys, you know, making $500,000, and I feel really bad for those guys. But, you know, once you get the, you have some tenure and you have some productivity, you know, you get a bigger contract. But for a league to average almost probably $4 million a year in terms of pay, it's like it's hard to feel bad for these guys. It really is. And to deny the fans, who are the ones who essentially pay these guys salaries, you know, for them to be so uncaring as not only to the fans, but to the workers who work at the stadium and you know, do all the venting and the other team employees who take care of these guys, who hand and foot on these guys because they don't do anything. You know, these guys couldn't take the game 50 years ago or 60 years ago when they didn't travel by charter plane, when they rode on a train with the rest of the people. They couldn't handle it because they feel like their privacy was being invaded, you know?
Well,
no,
it angers me. It just angers me, like you say. And what I'm thinking of, I'm not going to pay to go to a game. I was just talking to a friend of mine today. He's taking his grandson to a game, and I think there are going to be three of them all told. And after the dust had settled and he paid the bill, it was $650 for tickets.
Rick, I have not paid to go to the Red Sox since the 94 strike.
Yeah. Well, I haven't paid since Dave Winfield signed his contract in 1986, and Roger Clemens complained about carrying his luggage when he was making in one game what we were making as teachers in one year. So I haven't paid since 1986.
Yeah, no, yeah, I just simply refuse to go. Now, I've gone on comp tickets, and not that many times, but I refuse to go and watch some of these guys play at a less than a minor league level. Because the minor leaguers are busting their humps, and they're striving to do everything right, and these guys go up there, and they get their contracts, which are fully guaranteed, which is one of the things that's wrong with baseball. Every contract is fully guaranteed. You know, if you play 1 year out of 5 years, you get the 5 years. Nice life. Okay? And then to see the level of it, they can't bunt. They can barely hit and run. They're horrible base runners. Their fundamentals are awful.
They won't adjust against the shift.
Oh yeah. Now that, don't you see, that's one of the latest bargaining things, that the teams won't be able to put on shifts?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You see what Fred Lynn said? Come on, grow up. Hit to the opposite field.
I know. Even David Ortiz put down a few bunts down the third base line.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, somebody, I forget who it was, some famous major leaguer, he rebutted Fred Lynn by saying, I'm facing a 110-mile-an-hour fastball. And Lynn retorted, all the more reason to hit to the opposite field.
Yeah, really, in order to get the bat head all the way around.
Oh,
and who the hell, you know, 110 miles an hour? Yeah, they're throwing up in the 90s a whole lot more often than they have in the past. But no, very few guys get it up into triple digits.
Yeah.
And those guys have trouble throwing it for strikes when they do.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't get up. I'm getting up against all these guys because most of the hits come off when the guy throws an 86-mile-an-hour breaking ball.
All right. Well, I got your opinion on baseball, and it pretty much conforms with everything I've heard from everybody else. And everybody's pretty angry. No baseball. And almost like the shrug, who cares? But I do feel bad for support staff. It's too bad they're getting jobbed.
That's what I'm saying. These guys have no consideration for the other people that are employed in the game of baseball. Yeah. They could care less. It's all about them.
All right, we're going to check in with Nick Kukru in just a second here. If everything goes well, I'm going to pause, take a break, and hope I don't lose Tim. We'll be right back. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening.
Yeah.
All right. I got a quick report from Nick, Tim. And as I said, you're obviously I'm having trouble with this thing. Nick said that the Gloucester game, it was 3-1 after one, and then Marblehead came back, made it 3-2. Actually, it was 3-0 after one. Marblehead scored two goals, making it 3-2, and then the Fishermen got two more. It's now 5-2 toward the end of the second period, as Marblehead is on the power play. Emerson Marshall, sophomore, has a hat trick already. So Gloucester leading at the moment by a score of 5-2.
Yeah, I saw a score of 4-2. The Preps 7-7-0. Eek.
Yeah, Preps rolling. Yep.
5-2. Marshall is just a sick player. He is so talented.
You know, there's a lot of sophomores in the league, on the North Shore, I should say, not just in the Northeastern Conference, but a lot of sophomores that are major players. We're going to be hearing from for the next couple of years. But that's the score as we have it. We'll update the scores later on. Tim, if you see anything on Twitter, by all means, jump in. And, excuse me, Maskinamon, as we said, beat Quincy 5-1. According to Matt Williams of the Salem News, Jack Mertz and A.J. Sacco had a goal and assist apiece. Michael Bevilacqua got the game winner, and Ben Cohen and Chris O'Grady with the other goals. That's a Matt Williams tweet. And, of course, Phil Stacey tweeting on the St. John's Prep game, which is a little behind the scores we've been able to get, as the Prep's first goal was scored by Will Van Sicklin, but I don't have an update on that. So that's what we have so far. And I'm just trying to see if we have any others here.
I saw a Prep update, 7-0.
Yeah, you mentioned that, yep. That's what I was saying. Phil's is behind, but he did have that. We had the name of the one goalie there. I mean, one goal scorer, I should say. And Nick Giannino will be covering the Salem High Norwood basketball game. And I don't see any other. Oh, yeah, there it is. Nick Giannino reporting a minute ago on Twitter, 47-44 Norwood with 1 minute and 49 seconds left to go in the third. So that game is back and forth as well. All right, Coach, so... what do you want to talk about? You mentioned UConn women's basketball, excuse me, and maybe you want to wax poetic on them for a minute or two.
Well, you know, they've been one of the premier women's basketball programs in the country for years. And, you know, they've got, I think it's 11 national championships under Gino Auriemma. They got knocked out, I believe it was in the semifinals last year. They've lost five games, but their number one star was out injured. She's only played like eight games so far this year, Paige Buckner, and she's been bad the last several games. And since they lost on February 9th to Villanova by, I believe it was 2 or 3 points, their average margin of victory over the next nine games was 40-plus points. Yesterday took a dip when they only won by 20 points. So they take on Villanova for the Big East Championship tonight, which I'm sure they're going to have an extra ounce of adrenaline flowing. That starts at 8 o'clock. But, Rick, you say you can't get into the women. You watch the men. The men is like watching playground.
No, I don't watch college basketball at all.
You know, but if you watch the pros, men's college is exactly like the men's pros. It's all racehorse. It's throw it up. Nobody rebounds. You know, it's amazing. There's no challenge.
Well, let me clarify that, Tim. Let me interrupt you and expound further. I don't watch any basketball except the Celtics. Okay? That's it. If the Celtics are playing well, I'll watch it. And we've talked many times about what you just said. That's not fun to watch.
Now, if you watch the Connecticut women, you see basketball played, and most of the good women's basketball teams, they play sound fundamental basketball, and that's why they, they tear these other teams apart. I watched the entire Connecticut game yesterday, and I don't believe I saw them play zone once. It's all ferocious man-to-man, quote-unquote, defense. They are up, they are on your face, they are in the passing lanes, they score off fast breaks, they score off steals, they rebound. They do everything the way the game is fundamentally supposed to be played. It's like watching the old-time Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I find so enjoyable about it. And my wife always says, what are you watching for? They're always killing you for that. Yeah, but it's the manner in which they do it.
Mm-hmm.
They are so clinical in taking teams apart.
All right, that's Tim Kearns, who is recruiting for UConn basketball in the area. And we have him with us here. Nick's update, his Twitter update, Gloucester 5, Marblehead 2, after two periods, second period's over now. Headers came out flying at the start of the second period, but the Fishermen had a nice answer. Shots are 22-18, Gloucester. And again, Emerson Marshall has the hat trick through two periods for Gloucester, leading 5-2. I want to remind everyone that Sports Writers podcast will be dropping tomorrow, probably around 8 a.m., and that's with the Salem News Sports Writers, led by Phil Stacey, the sports editor, Matt Williams, the assistant sports editor, reporter Nick Giannino, and Nick Kukru, sports editor of the Gloucester Times, hosted by Bill Newell. And they'll have updates on the winter sports playoffs that the MIAA is conducting. And team and player notes from this past week and game previews are also going to be featured. That's tomorrow. And, of course, more success for the St. John's Prep Wrestling Team. If you've heard the podcast with the sports writers, they have gone into detail about how fabulous the coach and the team has been for decades now. So more on that tomorrow, of course, and a feature on the Maskenama Gymnastics Team as well. So that's coming up tomorrow. Coming up in just a few minutes here, we'll be talking with Gary Larrabee, update on golf, and then Mike Rainier is going to check in and talk some basketball with us, primarily about the Celtics, but probably other stuff as well. So, Tim, anything else catch your eye this week?
No, you know, baseball and the ownership, that they're barely talking. Bruce Arena became the all-time winningest coach in MLS soccer with the Revolution's 1-0 win over Dallas over the weekend, so congratulations to him. He's been around forever in the MLS, and I think the Revs and the Kraft family are really glad they have him. He's almost like the Bill Belichick of Major League Soccer. And they're getting underway, and it should be an enjoyable season there.
Well, Robert Kraft must be ascribing to the TB12 method because he just got engaged to a woman 33 years younger than he is. So that TB12 method must be pretty potent. Just saying.
Wow.
My wife and I were talking about that, you know, and to me it's congratulations. You know, seriously, the Kraft family and the New England Patriots and the Kraft organization, they do a lot of good things. So I personally am happy for Mr. Kraft, and she is a doctor, an MD, and a very successful one at that. So good luck to both of them. Pretty cool. All right, let me, Tim, I don't know what to say. I'm going to try to get Gary in here after we take a break. So I'll be back.
All right.
Sooner or later, I'll be back. Hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later. So
all right.
Here we go.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Okay, happy to be back now with Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, Tim Kearns, of course, our MSO super analyst, and Ambassador of Goodwill, Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer. I'm Rick Moore, and welcome back, Gary.
Great to be with you as always, Richard.
Yes, it is. We're happy to have you, and you and Tim are going to update us on what's happening in golf. I presume you're going to start with the Nationals, the national scene.
Yes. Well, we're still, I think, 4 weeks away from the Masters, but the plot continues to thicken, I think, on the PGA Tour with what we saw transpire yesterday down at the Arnold Palmer Invitational in Orlando, where Scottie Scheffler, a relative unknown until the last 4 weeks, he's now won twice on the tour in the last 4 weeks, the only player to have won twice this year. He wins another cool $2 million. He has to obviously, Tim, be now, I think, included into the among those players to watch come Masters time a month from now. And the fact remains, unknown a few weeks or a few months ago, he's now very well known in the world of professional golf.
You know, Gary, I was looking around the ESPN golf site, the PGA site, and the PGA on the ESPN site, PGA Tour Power Rankings are out, and looking through the list, and I'm thinking, where are the old timers? Where are the blue bloods? Because the title of the article is "Talent is not being wasted on the young." And I look down the top 25, and I'm like, oh my God, where are the names? There are very few names out there. It's all the young guys that have won over the last couple of years, Scheffler amongst them, and it's just amazing. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but the top 10 list, 1 to 10, Patrick Cantlay, John Rahm, okay, Colin Morikawa, Scotty Scheffler, Victor Hovland, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama, Cameron Smith, and Xander Schauffele. You know, I mean, names that we've recognized because they've won lately, but there's only like, you know, three really established big names there, Rory, Justin, you know, and Rahm. And all these younger guys that have been coming up in the last 2 years, and that are making major strides to enliven the game younger. Made the game younger, appealing to a young crowd with all the wins again this weekend. Again with Scheffler winning for the second time on the tour. It's just amazing for the game to keep all these young guys out there and winning.
Well, let's talk about Rory McIlroy first, who obviously had a very good start. He was leading after the first day, but he disappeared after that. He went 72, I think, 76, 76, long gone. So that's one story. But, you know, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, among others, have not done much of anything this year. Morikawa has been in the hunt. Thomas has been in the hunt. But we've had, I think, four first-time winners this year on the tour, and we thought we might see another one with Taylor. Taylor Gooch won last fall, so Taylor Gooch faded yesterday, but that's the story you write, Tim. You've covered it so far, but we'll see what happens over the next month, starting with the Players' Championship, and we'll see how it all builds up leading into the Masters 4 weeks from now.
Well, you know, interesting story there with the Players' Championship. Phil's not invited, and Bryson DeChambeau has pulled out because he said he hasn't recovered sufficiently from his injuries.
Well, injuries happen, and that's the case. We had, you know, two unique cases with DeChambeau and with Phil. Still time for the other big namers to get their games and get their game into top form for Augusta National. So we'll see how things evolve the next 4 weeks. We should, though, mention, of course, that Zach Johnson was named last week after our show, I think, as Ryder Cup captain, and he's a two-time major winner. I don't think we discussed him last Monday night, did we?
No, we did not, no.
And he's a good face, a great story. Some complete unknown coming out of the Midwest, I think out of Iowa. He won a Masters. He won a British Open, and a very good choice, I think, to be the captain for the American team that will go over to France next year and see how the Americans will fare at that time. So congratulations, Zach Johnson. One other good story goes, guys, from this past weekend that could be overshadowed by what Scotty Scheffler did down at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. A fellow named Ryan Bream, who I'd never heard of, and he's 35 years old. He's been out on the tour off and on over the years. He was about to lose his PGA Tour status if he didn't win this past weekend at the Puerto Rico Open or finish second solo. And what does he do? He's a wire-to-wire winner with his wife, Chelsea, caddying for him. I believe they're the first husband and wife team to win on the PGA Tour since Patrick Reed and his wife several years ago. A very, really feel-good story for Ryan Bream out of Puerto Rico. And I believe he now gets into the Masters by winning yesterday.
Nice. Now, in terms of Kevin for the Ryder Cup team, Zach Thomas, I think that it's a great pick. He's a low-key guy. He doesn't demand a lot of attention, but certainly has the respect of the players. And that kind of low-key persona, I think, sort of plays in to being an effective leader on that kind of a team where you got so many egos to deal with.
Good point. And, every captain has a different personality, but he is different from a lot of the recent captains we've had. And we'll have to see how he shapes this team into condition between now and a year from now when they really start to seriously consider who will be on the team, who will not be on the team. But good choice for Zach Johnson. And like you say, no conceit amongst his personality. I'm looking forward to seeing how he conducts himself as Ryder captain between now and next year. And he's still playing full time on the tour, so he may try to be a playing captain next year. We'll have to see how that develops.
Would you advise that, Gary?
Hey, if he earns his place on the team, you'll have three or four or five assistant captains, as you know, Tim. These guys love to have a bunch of their buddies serve as assistant captains, and that could certainly evolve. And I wouldn't be surprised if, although he has not been playing that great the last couple of years, he is pretty much on the downside of his career, but crazier things have happened.
Okay.
All right. What about, update us on the Salem Country Club and what's going on with that, if you would, Gary.
Well, very briefly, they did a wonderful job, I think, with their restoration project last fall. However, according to city officials, the club may have removed a very large number of trees, either in wetlands or on close to forestry, which were not given approval by the city. They needed to get approval by the city. But, of course, club officials are saying that the city knew everything they were going to be doing with this restoration project, including the removal of a lot of trees. We'll see how it shakes down over the next month or two. Nothing has evolved, according to my information, in the last week, couple of weeks. But we'll see how it all shakes down. I anticipate, guys, it's going to be much ado about nothing. The Salem Country Club has been a fantastic friend to the city of Peabody and a big boost to the economic situation in Peabody with their big tournaments over the years. So, but we'll see if anything legal legal ramifications do evolve over the next few months.
Wow. I didn't know that. Thank you. All right. Anything else, Gary?
No, it's just great to be with you guys, and we changed the clocks back this weekend.
Yeah.
We're going to get a little more chance to play golf late in the day if Mother Nature cooperates, but we're getting closer.
Yeah, the sun's higher in the sky. My wife is sensing spring. Hey, one question off the cuff here. I know that you have regaled us with stories at the Masters that just absolutely fascinate me. Did you ever go on any other national tours, any other national events when you were at the Salem News?
No, I just covered the U.S. Open at Brookline in 1988, and
okay.
Of course I covered quite a few of the pro tour events at Pleasant Valley, which was a long running event at Pleasant Valley out in Sutton.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of fun, Rick. A lot of fun in all those cases.
Did you have access to the players, unlike they have, you know, that now they have the conference where they stand in front of a board and everybody talks the same question? Did you have access like back in the day when you could go into the Celtics locker room and stuff like that?
Well, you know, the pandemic has changed all the rules and all the protocols for that. But, you know, in the old days, you know, and I guess I was working in the old days, the 80s and 90s, it was completely freewheeling. You could talk to the players anywhere you wanted, on the practice putting green, on the practice tee, before their interviews, after their interviews. And it was much more relaxed than it is now. It's a whole different ball game. And also because of security issues, and I'm afraid we're never going to go back to those very, very friendly times.
It's too bad, because that's where you sports writers really made your names and made it so interesting to read these stories that no one else would get, you know? So it's a shame, but I totally understand that. Let's see. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, if you could time travel, would you want to go back to, let's say, the 30s and 40s when the major league ball players traveled by rail, and they sat in the same cars, and they played cards and drank with the sports writers? Would you like a day of doing that?
I'm not so sure. But yes, those were the good old days. The best of days where the writers were extremely close to the players, and it would usually be reflected in the way they wrote about them. But that was a whole different ballgame before newspapers really had any, you know, rules and regulations and how you conduct yourself or how you can handle yourself with teams and the players you were covering. But those were the halcyon days of the best of all worlds for newspaper men in those days.
Oh yeah, great for us fans. All right, Coach, we got to get over to Mike here. There's no holiday next Monday, I believe, right? We just have to. We're all going to be dragging from the clock change, but we'll see you next Monday, Gary.
See you then, guys.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
All right, take care. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian and great golf writer. We will take a break and come back with Mike Grenier. I got to get some spots in here. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com, and this is North Shore Sports Night. I just said that.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, last score we had in the third period, Gloucester was leading Marblehead 5-2. I don't have an update on that, and we'll get to the other scores here before we check out. But again, the Prep winning easily in Division One hockey. They're up 7-0. Actually, that's a final score now. Xaverian beat St. Mary's 4-2 in hockey. Braintree leading Pope Francis 1-0. That's Division One. Gloucester leading 5-3 now in the third period over Marblehead. Tewksbury 2-0 over Long Meadow. That's going into the third period. Masco winning 5-1 over Quincy. And in the first period, Marlborough leads Essex Tech 2-0 in Division Three. That's in hockey. And the only basketball scores we have, hold on, Mike, Salem Academy losing to Taconic 63-44. That's Division Five. And that's boys basketball. And I wish people would stop calling me when I'm doing this. Salem Academy losing, as we said. Girls basketball, St. Mary's 80, North Reading 56. And anybody else local? Georgetown, no score on the Hoosick Valley game. All right. Sorry about that, Mike. Let's bring on Mike Grenier.
Oh, this is great. Are you kidding me? March. Hey, Tim, right? March, survive and thrive month. All these high school teams, the MIA tournament, it's just about the most exciting part of the year for, you know, anybody that loves hockey or basketball or wrestling or the swimming tournament. Anything that's going on statewide is a fantastic thing.
Oh, yeah. You know, we talked about it. Rick and I talked about it at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of unnerving when you hear a number one ticket on a number 66.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the time of the year when, you know, everybody's up for it. Everybody's been waiting for it.
Yeah.
You know, for the players, the coaches, the fans, the parents, the families, you know, there's so much hype and so much tension for both sides in every single contest.
I agree, Tim. I can attest to the excitement right now in my own family. My nephew plays for Central Catholic boys basketball team, and they're a terrific team. They were going to be right down the street at Beverly High tomorrow night, so I'll be there for that, and that's a number 8 seed and a number 9 seed, and both teams are very, very good.
Yeah, you know, and you can't stay off of your phone, can't stay off of the Twitter, you know, following scores if you can't be at the game. I guess one of the things that bothers me now is that you have to buy your tickets online, and one of the mentions that I saw was the fact that the MIAA is taking all of the money from the playoffs, and the schools are getting none of it.
Well, right. That's a long-standing tradition. I remember when the Salem High Fieldhouse used to host as many as 4 games in one day, like, in other words, like 2 in the afternoon and 2 at night. And Bob Gesswell, the athletic director of Salem High, would tell me that the only thing that Salem High would keep was the concession money, the money they made from the popcorn and the Pepsi Cola, you know what I mean? And the MIA kept all the gate receipts. So I guess that's still going on 25, 30 years later.
Well, I have a score. I got a score up.
There would be some kind of rectifying that, where the schools are charging kids for, you know, to play sports, and some of the money that come back from these tournament games that they're allowed to host could be used to offset some of those costs.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. It just keeps going on, and the bottom line is the kids love to play, and we as fans or students or parents, I love to go to the games, and it's really an exciting period of time. And I know, Rick, we want to start talking about the Celtics and the NBA, right?
Well, I just want to give one quick update. Salem is trailing Norwood big time now, late in the game. Norwood 71, Salem 50, with about 3 minutes left to go, and that is in Division Two. But, yeah, what's your thoughts? Because, has my tune changed? I mean, they were perennial 500, and they're playing so well right now.
Well, one of the numbers that stands out to me was when they went into that game against the Brooklyn Nets yesterday. And for some reason on a national level, it was being, you know, the Sunday showcase and a huge game for the Celtics and all that. Well, the Celtics are 14-2 in their last 16 games, and the Nets were 3-16 heading to that, you know, and they're now 3-17 in their last 20 games. That wasn't, you know, everyone says it's a signature win for the Celtics yesterday. It was an impressive win, but to me it was far more impressive when they beat the Memphis Grizzlies on Thursday night, because Memphis has the second best record in the NBA. So, all that business of the national stars and, you know, Kevin Durant and the ever annoying Kyrie Irving, being on the national stage, made it a huge game. Well, the fact of the matter is, the Nets are struggling like crazy. At 3-17, They're in danger of not even making the play-in game, which is hard to do when 10 teams are going to be involved in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
and they could drop to the 11th spot, you know, in the next couple of weeks. So, to me, the Celtics are playing phenomenal. They're playing the best basketball of any team in the NBA since mid-January, 20-6, and they're 14-2. And of course, Jason Tatum has taken his play to another level. Obviously, we should talk about him a little bit because, I don't know, he's just found himself I don't want to use Larry Bird zone because I think Tatum needs to win and Jaylen Brown needs to win a couple of championships first before we talk about them on that level. But in terms of his individual play and involving his teammates now more often, which is what we've been stressing for the last few months, he's doing that at a high level. And boy, what a game yesterday, 54 points. Just he played magnificently down the stretch. Everything you could ask for in a star player, he did.
You know, that's a great point. I want to mention this to you and Tim. We never mentioned this before because Tatum was he was sort of like, I don't know, by himself on an island. But the cliche is that great players make other players better around them. And Tatum hadn't done that, but great point. He is doing that now. He's making everybody else look good.
Yeah, he is, and he seems to have that knack now of knowing when to pass the ball,
mm-hmm.
and he's taking it. You know, the thing I love the most, and you know, of course, we've talked about this at various times this season. He was playing all that ISO hero ball, as we call it, hero ball, isolating and using up nearly all 24 seconds of the shot clock, and then firing away. He's not doing that anymore. He might isolate once in a while, however. He's more intent on taking it to the basket when his three-point shot is not going down. And he's going to the basket far more often than he did earlier in the season. And he's getting the foul calls, and he's getting to the foul line a lot more. And that's really a major factor in the Celtics' success. Because obviously, too, you've got some complimentary players. I mean, Jaylen Brown is no slouch. He hit a big three late in the game last night, and he's coming back from an ankle injury. He played very well yesterday. Marcus Smart is playing terrific basketball. And, of course, you know, I heard somebody last night saying the third most important player on the Celtics is Al Horford. I have to disagree. Rick and Tim, I think it's Robert Williams because of his development all season. He's getting better and better. He's not a guy who's going to shoot it from 17 feet. However, his athletic skill and his defensive skill and his shot blocking ability make him a huge factor in the middle of the court on teams that try to drive on the Celtics.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, I'm watching it happen almost every game. There's a play where the ball gets moves around the perimeter, and it gets to the top of the key, and Williams just sort of saunters in the low post towards the basket, and somebody alley-oops him. And he's himself, and he's rather authoritative when he puts it through.
Well, not only authoritative, right, Tim, but Rick, I think we're seeing his athleticism on those plays because he makes some of those lob passes. It's kind of almost like a basketball ballet, and he's so athletic. He swoops the ball in, and like you said, Tim, in an authoritative, vicious fashion. But at the same time, it's a beautiful play to watch because he's so athletic. He kind of reminds you, Rick. You know, we talked about Dr. J and his days at UMass and all that, and his artful dunks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Robert Williams gives you some artful.
You know what else I think is important, guys, is there was a pass, I don't know who it was, it might have been Marcus Smart, under the basket to Williams, and it was a tough pass behind the back. It looked like Smart was going up for the layup, and Williams got it. He's got good hands. And remember when Bird and Parrish and McHale, you got to be ready for Larry's passes, and Williams has got good hands.
He does have, he has great hands, and I also love his ability. I guess you'd call this his desire to go to the floor and chase after a loose ball. He's much like Marcus Smart in that respect. He'll crash the floor like Larry Bird used to and go for any loose ball. I love that about a player who's making millions of dollars. You know, I mean, you wish more players would do it, but Robert Williams is willing to do it. And, you know, I think right now we're looking at, Rick, there's only like the Celtics, I believe, have 16 games left, and they're in that number five spot. And I guess one of the problems with the slow start they had is that even though they're now 12 games over 500 at 39-27, there's still not much margin for error. In other words, they have to keep winning if they want to move into that fourth or third position where they would have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. And the beauty of it right now is they're only a game behind the Chicago Bulls, who are in the number four spot. So if they somehow exchange spots, the Celtics would have the home court against the Bulls in the first round. Or if they can climb another game or two up, they'd be up there with the Milwaukee Bucks, who've been playing good ball lately. And if they can be at the number three spot, they would probably play the Cleveland Cavaliers or a lesser opponent at the number six spot. So it really, every game is so critically important right now. Teams are jockeying for position, and those positions change literally every couple of days.
Okay, I got a couple of highlights. Gloucester Leeds cut the 5-4 against Marblehead.
Okay.
And Calvin Ridley suspended for the entire 22 season for gambling, for betting on games.
Right, I saw that.
Yeah. Now,
can you guys answer me a question? Regarding the state tournament, Swampscott had great season basketball, boys basketball, and they were the number 5 seed in Division 3, and they won their first round game, but they had to travel 240 miles round trip and play Pittsfield. And yet Pittsfield was like a number 26 seed or something like that. I haven't fathomed, why did that happen?
Don't know. Hadn't heard that. That's nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy. And now they won, and now they're playing Old Rochester, and Swampscott is at home for the second game of the playoff. You know, their second game of the tournament. They're at home being the number 5 seed, which they should have been in the first round. Although I've read that MIA had a rule that if your gym wasn't big enough to accommodate a certain number of people,
that's probably it. Yeah.
You're the team that has to travel.
Yeah.
That's the only factor I can think of, because there's no way that on paper, obviously Swampscott with a much better record, there's no way that Swampscott should have had to go 240 miles round trip and play Pittsfield, which is at the end of the earth, at least in Massachusetts.
It's in New York, isn't it?
Yeah, very close, right, Rick?
Yeah.
It's like one or two exits from the state line.
But it's a great tournament, and you guys know, whether you're going to a basketball or hockey game, the atmosphere is unbeatable. Everyone gets into it. You get the big crowds, you get the great competition, and you know, you just kind of wish it would go on for another month.
Well, what's cool about it is I think Christian Hansen was mentioning this the other day, and maybe some other coaches, but at this time of year, You have, you know, your rabid fans, of course, from your home school, but then there's so many other fans of just high school sports that this is what they're going to go see. They might not ordinarily go to their home high school basketball game during the winter, but during the playoffs, they're there and they fill the place. So it's a great atmosphere for the kids.
It is a great atmosphere. And Tim, you'll be interested in this, you being a UConn women's fan, I guess, right? UConn women's
fan.
Masconomic girls, the team that I'm very familiar with, they lost to North Quincy on Saturday in North Quincy. North Quincy's 22-0. And there's a sophomore girl from North Quincy named Gormley, G-O-R-M-L-E-Y, who's being recruited by Gina Auriemma. She went out and scored 56 points Saturday against Masconomic.
Oh, as a sophomore.
56 points. Although I was told that she took nearly every shot that North Quincy took, because UConn had representatives in the building watching her play. But apparently she's a very gifted player, only a sophomore, and scored 56 in a state tournament game against the Masco team. Not a great team, but a pretty good team. The final score was 80-57.
Wow.
I'm sure Gino probably cringed when he got that report back, that someone would actually, and maybe even the coach would suggest, okay, let's show them what you can do. Every time you get your hands on the ball, shoot it.
Right,
because if there's one thing that UConn is known for, is ball distribution.
Yep, and by the same token, I seriously doubt that the North Quincy coaching staff wanted to see one girl take, let's say, 70% of the shots or 80%, whatever it might have been, just to impress a college coach. So who knows, maybe it was an aberration. Maybe this girl takes far fewer shots in other games, but she's obviously a talent, and we'll see in a couple of years if she winds up at UConn.
Wow. She's only a sophomore, you said?
Yes, that's correct. That's absolutely correct. 56 points in a state tournament game, though. That's pretty impressive. She must be legit.
Yeah, you know, I guess the thing you have to wonder about is, you know, I mean, it takes a tremendous amount of discipline and commitment to acquire that level of skill at that age. You know, but at the same time, what do you give up on the other side?
Right, exactly. You invest so much of yourself into the game. I mean, obviously there was a kid that I covered, and Rick, you may you remember, actually, you guys were both of it, Breanne Stefferson.
Oh, yeah, of course, eighth grader, yeah.
Of course, and now, of course, she had the opportunity to play with, because of the different rules then, because the junior high school was under the same roof as the high school, she got to play high school ball from seventh grade on, seventh, eighth grade, and 4 years of high school, and a fantastic player, a fantastic competitor, a fantastic kid. I got to know her extremely well. Went on full scholarship at Boston College, and they won the state championship at Masconomet when she was just a sophomore. Mm-hmm. So that may be an equivalent story. And Breanne turned out to be quite, you know, quite the kid who went on to play college ball, and now she's working in California. But she had a great career and certainly was a prodigy, a national prodigy. Every college wanted her. And I know that Gina Auriemma, for a fact, wanted her. I think she kind of made a verbal commitment and then decommitted and ended up at Boston College, where she enjoyed a very nice career.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, you know. Even some of the talent of Breanne could go to a UConn and not find the success that she had at Masco and later at BC, because Gino goes six, maybe seven deep, and those other kids sit and wait a long time, and some of them, you know, never get off the bench waiting, because he just keeps stockpiling, you know, players of the year from every single state. So I applaud her for going to BC, for staying home, playing at BC, and being noticed.
That's right, and I think they had some of their best years when she was at BC. In other words, they made the NCAA tournament a couple times. They had good records. They had Kathy Inglesi as coach. She was a very good coach, and she had a very good experience there. She tore her ACL, and because of that, had a medical thing where she could have a fifth year at BC, because she missed it, and she pursued her master's degree. What a great opportunity. It saved the family another $40,000 or $50,000 or whatever it was at the time, because she was able to get her master's degree by going to a fifth year at Boston College.
Wow. Yeah, well, on the brink of winning the game. They were ahead 6-4 on a Jack Costanzo goal.
Yeah,
and Marmalade's pulled the goaltender, so that thing should be just about over. Speaking of being over, Mike, we got to cut it short. Sorry about that. But
it's okay. But Rick, I'm just going to add one final note.
Yep.
My heart just melted when Kyrie Irving in the postgame mentioned a shout-out to the mayor of New York City for not basically giving in to the Nets wanting Kyrie to play home games and, you know, making an exception and allowing Kyrie Irving to play in home games. And obviously they're not doing that just yet. They're not lifting the mandate. So Kyrie has to sit out games that are played in Brooklyn, New York.
He's a real performer in more ways than one.
Oh, yeah, he's just a heartwarming individual.
All right, Mike. We'll do it again next Monday.
That sounds great.
All right, thank you, Mike. Be well.
Thank you.
All right, Michael, we'll see you.
Take care.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, who is a sports writer and sports historian, as well as Gary Larrabee, and they were teammates in the Salem News sports department for quite a while. Speaking of teammates, Coach, any final thoughts here?
No, UConn women about to start, Rick.
All right. Good luck. Hope you have fun. And good luck to all the teams that are out there. You can go to Boston, the Boston Globe High School scoreboard. I'll post that on this post so that you can check it out, and I'll post the links to the MIAA tournament updates as well. So that's it for tonight. Tim, I thank you. We'll see you next Monday.
All righty, Rick.
All right, Coach. Take care. You too. Bye-bye. All right, that's Tim Kearns, who is our MSO sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. On behalf of Bill Newell, who's hosting the Sports Writers Podcast tomorrow morning around 8 o'clock here on MSO News Sports, Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Be well, be safe, and good night.